This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Our voice, preserving our stories. Join Caroline Vogels and Jess Moorhy for an insight into the lives of our community elders. Joy 94.9 gratefully acknowledges the support of the Victorian Government and Public Record Office Victoria for making this project possible.
Carol Wilkinson grew up as an only child in North Yorkshire in the 50s and 60s, studied audiology at London University, became engaged, and travelled to Australia as a 10-pound pom. Carol has had a fulfilling career in the field of audiology and found time to be a big part of Joy, Gay and Lesbian Foundation of Australia, and the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard, amongst others. In 2001, Carol was awarded the Centenary of Federation Medal for services to the gay and lesbian community. Welcome, Carol. And what's a 10-pound pom for those that may not have heard the term before?
Thank you very much for asking me to come in. What's a 10-pound pom? Back in the 50s and 60s, Australia was so desperate to get immigrants that they used to pay people virtually to come to Australia. It meant that all you had to do, certainly from Europe, it was pay £10, and the Australian government paid the rest of your passage, that your airfare, or boat trip, whatever it was, I came by air, brought you to Australia as, a person that they thought would be suitable to keep colonising the country. So £10 was, even in those days, you know, I came here in 68, was still quite a small amount. So it was a good deal. And the deal was you had to stay for 2 years. If you went back to England before the 2 years was up, you had to pay back the government what they'd paid to get you here. But after 2 years, you were a free agent, so to speak. So it was perhaps aftermath of the convict era. You were still sort of incarcerated here for 2 years, but it was a good scheme. It was I don't know that I would have been here other than that, and I'm very, very glad that I'm here.
So considering you arrived by air in 1968, is this a term that's still commonly used in the UK?
That scheme doesn't exist anymore, but it's not really used in the UK. It's more what people call me here. Most of the people that have come over on this scheme, who are often older, or well, I guess it went through somewhere into the 70s, I think, but post-war, after 1945, and so through the 50s, 60s, and I think into the 70s. There's lots of 10-pound poms in Australia.
So we thought we'd start by talking a little bit about your career in audiology.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not often I talk about that.
Well, it's refreshing then. That's okay. What we try to do here on Our Voice. Hearing impairment, you know, we'd like to understand what it means for people with hearing impairment. Mm.
I guess I got into this by default, in a sense. I was a sort of 17-year-old sort of finishing college and what am I going to do next? And I saw an ad saying audiology technician required to train a student. And it was in the days when you basically did all of that sort of training, whether it was physio, audiology, OT, it was all done sort of as a student within a workplace, a bit like nursing was always done. And I kind of went, oh, what the hell is this? I don't have no idea what it was, but I looked it up, found out a bit more about it, applied for the position and got the position. And it's the sort of work that I've been doing ever since. And it's good work. I did spend 30 years or so in my own business doing mainly occupational noise. But what I'm doing now is working for an organisation called Better Hearing Australia. And I don't mind plugging Better Hearing Australia because it's not a company. It's a not-for-profit organisation. And basically we help people who have hearing problems and we try to get them, how can I put this? Look, confident, I guess, about what they can do, how they can do it, how they can manage their hearing to the best of their ability, whether it's with technology, hearing aids, or whether it's with other strategies. And it's a really important organisation in the sense that it provides something that no other organisation in Victoria does provide. Most organisations that are dealing with hearing impaired people are basically selling hearing aids. You know, there's a, you know, a couple of others that do other sort of stuff, but nothing like Better Hearing Australia. We also run the only hearing aid bank, which means that people who are not very well off, can't afford to buy hearing aids and are not covered by the government scheme can actually get free secondhand hearing aids and be looked after by us, which is really good because a lot of people fall through the cracks. They're not employed. They're not on pensions, so they don't get free hearing aids. They're not employed, so they can't afford hearing aids. But because they haven't got a hearing aid, they can't get a job. Vicious circle, you know.
So is it fair to say that the clients that you deal with are not people who are born with profound hearing loss?
That's right.
Would this come about sort of through damage to your ears through maybe work environments?
Could be, yeah.
Right.
There's a whole range of reasons why people get hearing loss. And that can be because of medical conditions. It can be because of noise. It can be because of the aging process.
Mm.
You know, statistically, once you're over 60, you've got a 50% chance of having a hearing problem.
Coming from a personal background, my father has significant hearing loss and it's just due to probably age and also his working environments. Now, he is also quite stubborn and very proud, and he is not really proactive in going out and seeking help. So what sort of advice could you give to people who may be in that same situation?
The best advice I can give to people who are in Victoria is get in touch with Better Hearing, because we can help people to understand how best to manage their hearing loss. If you go straight to someone who's fitting a hearing aid, you should get that sort of help, but you don't always.
Right.
And what we often do is fill the gaps where people are not getting the right sort of information and help. So people need to get used to hearing aids. They're not new ears. They are devices that help, but there's lots of other things, and I could wax lyrical for ages on this, but there are lots of other things that people can do to actually get help. And finding somewhere that's willing to spend the time and the effort actually helping with that, fantastic.
So it might be an opportunity just to plug the website for that, Carol, if people want to get in contact.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to. It's all the W's, of course, betterhearing.org.au.
And just from a styling point of view, hearing aids these days, what do they look like? Are they like back in the day when they were very obvious?
No, look, it's a funny question, actually, because hearing aids kind of for years have been getting smaller and smaller and smaller because no one wants to admit they've got a hearing loss. I'm not sure why, because there's nothing wrong with having a hearing loss.
I don't see it as any difference to wearing glasses.
Precisely. But what's happening now is a lot of the behind-the-ear hearing aids, what's happening is they're starting to colour them. You can get them with your footy colours.
Wow.
You know,
my boss will go for that now.
You can get
Collingwood.
Yeah, you can get them with, black and white. I mean, that's not colour.
Boring.
That's not colour, is it? But you can get them in various other sort of colours and shapes. And look, you can get them with Bluetooth.
Wow.
So you can link to all sorts of stuff. But problem is they are expensive, which is why so many people feel, oh, you know, I can't afford this, or I haven't got the money to put into that. Mm-hmm. So we see a lot of refugees, asylum seekers, as well as people who are lower wage earners and out of work.
What a fantastic organisation.
Yeah. So you've brought a song with you today, Carol?
I've brought a few.
Yeah, so we might kick off with, I think you brought Dusty.
I did. I love Dusty Springfield.
And we all concurred with that. Yes, yeah, very positive. Yeah.
So, you know, I usually know what to do with myself, but sometimes Dusty didn't.
Joy 94.9.
Our voice. Preserving the stories of our community elders. Joy 94.9.
Carol, you were married for 6 years. What precipitated the breakup? And I believe it was around the mid-70s?
I came to Australia actually with a guy that I ended up marrying. I don't know how long we'd been going out together, a couple of years, I guess. And we both wanted to come to Australia and we ended up getting married. I was married for 6 years, as you say. And look, I'd have to say that what precipitated the breakup, my sexuality. Yeah, you know, at the time when I got married, it wasn't that I didn't recognise that I was gay, that I was a lesbian. It was more that I didn't want to recognise that I was. That, you know, it's like I can deal with this. I can be normal. I didn't know anybody else who was gay at that time or lesbian. I didn't know anybody, you know. And so it was really a stab at normality. Mm. I'd have to say it was a stab at normality, and it didn't work for me. And I guess, look, I don't believe it works for many, if anyone. You know, you don't choose to be gay. You don't choose to be lesbian. You don't choose to be transgender. You don't choose what you are. It's like you don't choose your colour.
Yeah.
And but I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah. But you were saying that prior to coming on air that you're still friends, so that must be quite a remarkable man also to help.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice guy, lovely guy. And he's remarried. Yeah. He's certainly straight. And, he's been married to the same woman now for, well over 30 years. And I'd go as far as say we're good friends. We don't see a lot of each other because he doesn't live in Melbourne anymore. Yeah. He lives down out in the country, but certainly we see each other a few times a year and get on really well, have a bit of a laugh, and
great.
He knows the situation now.
And being an only child, how did your parents react to the news?
Well, look, I don't know that my parents reacted. It's more that they just eventually was just sort of pretty obvious what I was. And my mother, who is still alive, accepts that my partner, Chris, is my partner. And, you know, we don't talk about sexuality particularly. Mum's much older now and it's not something that she would feel comfortable talking about, and I kind of wonder whether I would feel comfortable talking about it with her personally. But I mean, she's been into Joy. She knows what I've been involved with. She's listened to Joy. She's listened to me on air, and I'd have to say there's no issue.
No issue.
Yeah, I mean, as an only child, I must admit, I sometimes wonder: is there anyone else in my family? Am I the only gay in the family?
Probably not.
I wonder.
So take us back. Here you are fresh into a new country. You've identified you're now a lesbian.
Yes.
It's the 70s.
It is.
What was it like?
It was pretty scary in a way. Yeah.
What was scary for you?
Well, scary in the sense that, you know, you're kind of a little bit on your own. Trying to find your way in a, not just in a new country, although I'd been in Australia about 6 years by this time, but in a new culture almost. The gay community was a lot more closeted at that time. It was still illegal for males at that time. I started going to places like, the Prince of Wales Hotel in St Kilda and a few other sort of places in the late 70s, early 80s that you could go to.
So describe, you go into the Prince of Wales, was there, you know, gay women hanging at the bar or?
Oh yeah, there was people, there was plenty of people around. And
was it only gay women or like on a certain night or?
The pokies on a Sunday was mixed.
Okay.
And there was a drag show, which I must admit, I'm not really into drag.
Yeah.
Dancing, you know, a few drinks, you'd meet people. Often you'd find, you know, you'd go with somebody that you already knew anyway. I guess I've been a serial monogamist. You know, I've sort of over the years, I've often had a partner, my current partner I've been with now for 20 years, so that's very serial, or very monogamous, really. I've usually had somebody that I've been with over the years.
Tell us about Chris and how you met.
Well, interestingly, we were the first gay and lesbian switchboard romance.
Oh, wow.
When gay and lesbian, I was one of the, both of us were very early in gay and lesbian switchboard when switchboard first started. In fact, before it was actually operating, Chris was training to be a counsellor and I was on the board, as I always am. I'm the meetings board person. And, so we met through switchboard and became 1991. And so switchboard's 21 this year.
You're listening to Our Voice on Joy 94.9 with Caroline and Jess. Joining us in the studio is Carol Wilkinson. Carol, you've talked a little bit about finding your new most current relationship that you're at Gay and Lesbian Switchboard. Tell us about the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard. What is the service that it provides?
Gay and Lesbian Switchboard is fantastic. It's a peer counselling service, counselling, referral and information service. And I could wax lyrical again about this, you know, because it is very close to my heart. I'm a life member of Switchboard, as well as Joy. And I think it's the sort of service that really does something amazing for the community. It's the sort of service that needs to be supported and probably isn't supported as well as it should be, even by the community.
It's a telephone-based service?
Telephone counselling, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And anybody can call for any reason?
Absolutely. And as I say, you know that if you call there, you are going to have someone speaking to you who is gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, intersex. It's a peer counselling service.
And how is it funded?
Look, my understanding at the moment, they do get a little bit of funding from DHS, Department of Human Services, but, you know, it's never enough. It's never enough. And it's the sort of service that, because of the type of service, there's a lot of confidentiality, privacy involved. It means that sometimes there is certain restrictions in how much people can find out about this. You know, people are not going to say, oh, guess what, you know what we did for someone today, we saw so-and-so, we talked to so-and-so who had this problem, blah blah blah, and people go, oh wow, how fantastic. But
you
can't promote it in the way that a lot of places would promote themselves, by, you know, really sort of interesting publicity. Therefore it's very difficult for them to get the right sort of funding. And I would certainly say, you know, a lot of people give money to Joy, and it's fantastic because Joy also, of course, is a fantastic organisation, does a huge amount for the community. But, you know, Gay and Lesbian Switchboard isn't out there on the radio sort of saying, hey, help us, help us.
That's a very interesting point.
It's something that really needs to be looked at by the community.
So how did you first enter into thinking you wanted to become involved in the GLBTI community to that sort of extent?
Look, prior to going to Switchboard, I was actually a Lifeline counsellor.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And it was sort of almost when I heard that Switchboard was starting up, because there had been an old gay line which had collapsed for various reasons. But when I heard that Switchboard was starting up, it seemed the natural thing for me to go, ooh, you know, might be good to be involved in that. Because I already had the skills. I was already a trainer at Lifeline. So, it was a natural progression for me, really.
Yeah, and how did you balance with, once you had your romance at the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard, how did you balance then working with both of you in such a really intense environment and then starting a new relationship? And
I'd have to say it was never a problem. I really don't think it was. It wasn't as though we were counselling each other.
Yep.
And I don't know that we even did a lot of shifts together. Mm-hmm. We both actually were trainers at Switchboard for some time. And in that sense, we were working kind of together. But we never actually took groups together. I always worked with one of the other trainers, and Chris always worked with another trainer. And we did that on purpose. That was, you know, you don't work with your partner. Yeah, not a problem. We found it to be quite manageable, I think.
Are you involved together in any other activities?
Look, not a lot. We certainly danced together.
Tell us about that.
We both boot scooters. It's one of those things where you kind of go, should I admit to this?
Absolutely.
But it's boot scooting is great fun. We don't tend to dance much now. We were doing a lot of clogging with rainbow cloggers for a while. But unfortunately, I've got arthritis and I've got it in my hands and feet. And dancing is not something I can do a lot of without getting a lot of pain. So, but we sort of did that. We nowadays, I think the thing we do most together, in a sense, is stay at home and watch TV. With our blanket over our knees.
Oh, please.
Sounds like my house.
Put your head on your lap.
No, we travel together a lot. Yeah. We enjoy travelling, and we've got to an age where we kind of want to do travelling. We want to spend what money we've got on enjoying that side of our sort of existence. And so we're sort of doing a lot of that sort of thing. Chris is very... Oh, how can I put it? She's very artistic in a way. She likes a lot of craft sort of things. I'm not particularly artistic at all. I like photography, but, you know, I'm not artistic. And so she does a lot of that. I do the garden and, you know, a few other bits and pieces that I'm interested in. So it's an ideal marriage.
So would that be a reason that you think you've stayed together for so long, is that you each have your own lives and then together join in some aspects of it?
I think that's important in a relationship, that you do have the things that you are interested in separately, that you don't have to be together constantly, that you don't have to always sort of do everything together. Look, I'm sure that there are people who do feel that the opposite to that they, oh, you know, I want to be with this person all the time, but I don't know that would work for either of us.
It's wonderful that you've found that connection and a good balance to life.
Yeah, she's a good woman.
She sounds wonderful.
She is a good woman, yeah.
Joy 94.9.
Our voice, preserving our stories. Join Caroline Vogels and Jess Moorhee for an insight into the lives of our community elders.
Carol, you became the first Joy president, female Joy president, in around 2001. Is that about right?
Yeah, that would be about right. But don't ask me dates.
No.
I'm hopeless with dates.
Well, that's good. We can say around 2001.
You know,
that'll be good enough.
Yeah, it was then.
But you led the organisation in a really important part of the Joy history, and that was when we were making an application for the full-time licence.
Yeah, look, I was really privileged and in a sense lucky, I guess, to be... the president of Joy at that time, when the full-time license application was just going in and was being debated, I guess. At the time when we all went to the town hall, to Melbourne Town Hall, and we had our own QC, basically, putting the case for us.
Can I just ask, who's when? Did you say we all?
Yeah, that's a good point. Many, many people from Joy who'd been around for a long, long time were putting in an awful lot. And look, the names that come to mind in terms of the people that put in so much were people like Mark Gardner, who did so much of the writing of this application, and Paul Turditch, who the station manager at the time, who just worked relentlessly on getting this done, getting it organised, and making sure that Joy had such a damn good application that it was almost be impossible for it to be denied. You know, it was so good, the application, that any denying of that application, if we hadn't got a licence, it would have had to be because we were gay and lesbian. Mm. Yeah, it really was an amazing sort of time.
So you made sure everything else was excluded and... Yeah. It had to be basically about the issue.
Absolutely, yeah. And look, Joy at the time, we were very aware that we had to be good. Not only did we have to be good in the sense of we had to do good work, but we also had to be good in the sense that we didn't want to be naughty on air. Mm-hmm. No one could come back to us and say, well, you know, you don't want to give them a license because listen to what they're saying. So, and I, you know, that meant good in terms of language, politics. You know, we tried to maintain a really fair sort of coverage of everything that was happening. And you know, I sort of look back and I think, well, that's probably not a bad sort of way to operate a station anyway.
Absolutely, I think.
You know?
So having just recently completed a Taste of Radio course here at Joy and learning a little bit about the codes of practice for community radio these days, for me it was pretty much handed on a plate saying these are the codes that we need to follow. Mm. From that previous comment, is it something that you needed to develop yourself back in 2001?
Look, we were certainly members of the CBAA at that time. And so there was the codes of practice. But I think what we were doing was saying, look, we've got to be better than better.
We've got to be seen
to be really, really good. We want to do everything so right. We don't want to give anyone any excuse for us not being on the air. And so we were very cautious and very careful. But I think with good reason.
It sounds like a great time to actually have been a part of. And I think some of that has transitioned through to now. But it's really great that we can repeat these stories because it is our basis. And it shows, I think, that we have to continually strive to be better and be above reproach.
Yeah, look, I don't think you can let your hand slip. I think you've got to keep up the standard.
And having that sense of pride, I think, was what is all common and what we're all working towards.
And look, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think that the GLBTI community as a whole expects good quality.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
They expect good quality. We expect good quality. And they expect Joy to be up there with the best of the community radio stations. They're not going to accept anything less.
So before it went full-time, talk about what it was like before we actually had the full-time licence.
Well, basically, Joy did a very, I think, smart thing. And this was nothing to do with me, I can assure you. But what they decided was to take the number of days per year that you were allowed to broadcast on the part-time licence and just do weekends. A lot of radio stations would take a block of about 3 months and go on air 24 hours a day for 3 months or whatever the amount of time was. Joy sort of went, no, let's just do weekends when our community might be involved and listening and so on, which meant that there was a regular presence of Joy. People knew when it was on, and it was on for most of the year.
It's bloody brilliant.
Yeah.
Really?
It was a very smart move.
Strategy,
smart move. So it meant that people not only could listen to Joy through that time, but the people who were volunteering could get regular practice. You know, people started to improve. You go on air for a couple of months a year and then you don't go on air for another 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've forgotten everything you've learned, you know. So it actually worked, I think, to Joy's advantage, but also to the listener's advantage.
Mm.
And at one stage we were sharing and a lot of our listeners would know this, we were sharing our frequency with the Muslim radio.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting time because, you know, you'd sort of turn on straight after the Muslims had sort of been on. And sometimes I'm sure there were some
crossover.
Muslims out there that would turn their radio on in the car in the next morning and get Joy sort of blasting out sort of, you know, and get a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
But likewise, on a Monday morning when the Muslims started after Joy had been on over the weekend, you got in your car and you were called to prayer, you know, and it was a bit of a shock for us as well. But, you know, that it worked. It worked well. And there were times when I know that the Muslim radio had a problem with their transmitter.
Yep.
And they used Joy's transmitter. Yeah. And we were happy to work with them in that way. And it worked very, very well.
There were some good stories from then. And I know for myself as a listener back then, I always do mourn the time when I thought, oh, no, I'm going to lose Joy for those weeks. And it would be like, you know, my best friend going on holidays for a while and I would just wait for Joy to come back.
Yeah.
It was such a big part. And sometimes I think, too, that it makes it more special when it's not so freely available.
Mm.
And there was a very committed group who was, just like me, just think, oh, what are we going to do? Because Joy's not going to be on air.
Yeah.
So it was quite an amazing, amazing thing.
As well as being the president of Joy, were you involved on air?
Yes, I was involved on air to start with because I was a boot scooter and we started doing a bit of a country music show. Not that I'm heavily into country music, I should say, but I was the one that got sort of kind of lumbered with doing the show. But then I sort of became involved more with the programming committee as well. Mm-hmm. And from there, I started doing a show called Baby Boomers, which was a 60s show, or primarily 60s, 50s and 60s, because it was decided that we didn't have anything that was doing 50s, 60s sort of music at that time and that probably there'd be people out there that would enjoy it. And there was no one around that sort of seemed to put their hand up. I went, yeah, I could do that. So I did that for at least a couple of years until I decided, no, I think it's done its time. Time to sort of go off. And so I've done a few different shows, but more latterly, of course, I've been involved for a few years. I was involved with Saturday Magazine. So that was my sort of, that was the thing I enjoyed probably the most. Mm-hmm. Although I did like the 60s. Yeah. Do like the 60s, yeah.
So just before, I'd like to talk about the Gay and Lesbian Foundation you're a part of. But before we talk about that, can I just ask, how did you celebrate when you were told that, yes, we've got the full-time licence?
I think some of us probably went, oh.
Tired now.
And, yeah, can we go to sleep now? And certainly people like Paul Turditch, who's station manager, I think, you know, there was just it was a huge feeling. Almost, in some ways, I think there was almost a feeling of, not disbelief, but can we really believe this? Can we really believe that it's actually happened? We've actually now got a full-time license for the next 5 years.
Oh, fantastic.
And,
yeah.
And look, I think people have to bear in mind that it is a five-year, I think it's still five-year license.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and
so we've had to reapply. I think still, it was last when Danae Gibson was here.
Yeah. We still have to keep things good. We still have to be good.
Mm. Yeah. Striving for excellence.
Absolutely.
So tell us about the Gay and Lesbian Foundation. That's another incredible organisation you're involved with.
Yeah, look, GALFA, or Gay and Lesbian Foundation of Australia, it's a philanthropic organisation and it's the only national, purely gay and lesbian philanthropic organisation in Australia. It's one of the few organisations that's gay and lesbian that is national. It's still very much in its infancy, but we have actually now made three significant grants. Thank you. We've made three significant grants. Everyone wants money. People write to us all the time saying, have you got some money? But we actually need to be a repository for people to give money first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the biggest things that we're trying to do is make sure that people understand that GALFA is there for people to make bequests to, for people to donate to at tax time. So, you know, around the end of June when you're thinking, I've got a few hundred dollars, maybe $1,000 or more that I could donate to a worthy cause, GALFA is one of those tax-deductible places that you can give your money to. And it will be only used for organisations that support the GLBTI community. Although we're GALFA, Gay and Lesbian Foundation, we are GLBTI and we will support any worthy cause that is supporting the GLBTI community.
It's fantastic.
Sounds like a good opportunity to play your song Hallelujah, and it could be Hallelujah that we have organisations
absolutely
such as those and people like yourself that are representing on those committees.
You're listening to Our Voice with Caroline Jess, and our special guest is Carol Wilkinson.
So Carol, we've asked you to bring in a little memento with you that's significant to you. Can you describe what you've brought and what it means to you?
Well, I brought a photograph, which is a very, very early photograph of... I'll hold it up to the microphone so everyone can see.
Yeah, it's good radio. Yeah.
It's a photograph of a few of the early sort of crowd at Joy with Samantha Fox. And, look, it sits on a pinboard that's in our back room that's got a whole lot of old photographs on. And I sort of picked it up and thought, you know, that is really long a time ago, Joy. And you can even see, it's at the old studios at Coventry Street, but you can see how much room there is around us.
Yeah.
There wasn't as many desks in there, and, you know. And it was, I think Gav Ryan had interviewed Samantha Fox.
And she's looking gorgeous, I'd have to
say. She's looking gorgeous, but short.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that, is there,
even
Carol?
Even shorter than me. I'm only 5 foot two, and she's shorter than me. And it's sort of a reminder of what Joy used to be like, in a sense, for sure. The other thing that I've sort of got here is a CD, which is something that I really, really enjoyed doing. It's an interview with Vicky Wickham, who was Dusty Springfield's manager.
I would like to have a listen to that.
And in fact, good friend. And I was fortunate enough to be able to interview her for a good hour.
Wow.
And then Paul Miguel, who's also from Joy, did some production on it for me. And we turned it into a one-hour special. It wasn't just Dusty Springfield special. We had some other stuff because Vicky Wickham herself had been a producer of shows in the UK and done a lot of work in the industry. And, she is a good professional in the music industry, but little known because she's behind the scenes all the time.
Yeah.
So a very interesting person to interview. And the other thing that I brought was because I knew that probably you'd sort of think I was a bit strange if I didn't bring it, is the Centenary Medal that I was awarded in 2001, which was specifically for services to the gay and lesbian community. A somewhat sort of embarrassing piece of memorabilia in a way, because when I received this, I truly found it quite embarrassing, because so many people, and particularly at Joy and the other organisations that I've been involved with, have done so much and easily as much and often so much more than I have ever done, that I was incredibly humbled by sort of receiving this. In fact, I tried to hide the whole thing from everyone. I wasn't going to mention it when I got the thing saying you have been awarded this. But unfortunately, one of the journalists on one of the, I think it was Melbourne Star Observer or one of the newspapers, had the list and went through it and rang me and said, I see you've been awarded that. I went, how the hell did you find out? And she said, well, there's a list in the paper. And I said, God, you must have gone through every, you know. And she said, I'm a journalist.
Oh.
So then, of course, I had to let Mark Gardner, who was the programming person here at the time, know, because I thought, if it goes in the paper before it goes on Joy, when I'm the president of Joy, no, I can't let that happen. So, yeah. And then, you know, latterly, what I've come to realise is that this is not about me. This is about the gay and lesbian community. It really is. It's I could never have received this had it not been for Joy, for Switchboard particularly, and the opportunity that those organisations gave me to be part of this community. So as far as I'm concerned, this medal belongs to everybody in the community. It doesn't just belong to me, and I mean that's it quite seriously.
I think it's a wonderful memento for your time, but as you say, for the reflection of the GLBTI community. But I wonder, Carol, could you just describe the medal? Seeing we are on radio, we can't hold it up to the camera.
It's silver. It's got a. Actually, you get two. You get one of the ones that you can wear with your evening wear.
Okay, not
as
earrings.
As well as the not earrings. No. I like that. You get the big one and you get the little sort of dress medal as well. But you also get a pin that you can wear in a lapel, which has been in the same suit, I think, for the last God knows how many years. So it's only when I put that suit on that it ever comes out. And the reason it comes out is because I wore it somewhere that I thought might be important. Sometimes you go places and you think, you know, with Galfa, I'd like to get some money from these people. Will they be impressed if I have this little pin? Will they give more to the community? In other words, I still feel that this is something that can do some good, which for is the community, fantastic. You know. But, yeah, it doesn't come out very often, but it's a silver medal, two of them, and it's got like a six, oh, is it seven actually? It's got seven stars, and it's around the centre it says Centenary of Federation, 1901-2001. Yeah, it's a real...
Does the blue and red, so the banding on it is the red stripes surrounded by the blue, does that mean anything?
Look, all medals, my understanding is that all medals have their own sort of little colour sort of band, whether it's a medal that you get, you know, during wartime or whatever. And there is also apparently a position in which you wear your medals. You know, so they, when I got this, they sent me all the details of when you wear medals, if you are invited to... an event where it says decorations shall be worn. Right. I've only been invited to one since then. And you have to wear your medals in a certain order. And it's like, well, I've only got one.
Wow.
So what order do I wear it in? Oh, I think this order.
Maybe if you don't mind, we could take a photo of that and put it on our Facebook page.
Yes. You can put a photograph of that medal on there. That's not a problem at all.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And if you've just joined in, you're listening to Our Voice with Caroline and Jess, and our special guest is Carol Wilkinson, who's just been talking about a very significant medal that she was provided in 2001 for the Centenary Federation.
So, Carol, you previously mentioned that you and Chris like to travel.
We do.
Are there any places or countries in the world that have really impacted on your lives?
Look, I think everywhere we go impacts at the time when we go there. You know, it's we're spending a lot of time traveling. We've just come back from South America, which was fantastic, 4.5 weeks, Peru, Ecuador, Chile. Wow. So did all the, you know, Galapagos, all the things that people do over there. Fantastic trip. We tend to try and have a really good trip every second year. And a couple of years ago, we went to Alaska and Canada. And did the interior of Alaska as well, up to Fairbanks and places like that. We've been a few places. One of the things we haven't done is we have done a fair bit of Australia, in the sense that over the years we've seen a lot, and we did go across the Top End a few years ago. We've done New Zealand as well, I like to travel. I like the culture. I like the food, the difference between Australia and other places. And, look, I think that the more you travel, the more you realise just how fantastic Australia is and how fantastic, you know, the places. We've got places for the GLBTI community like Joy and Switchboard and Galfa and all the other many sort of organisations that you don't find in so many other countries.
Yeah, we're very rich and very fortunate, aren't we?
We're very, very lucky. Yeah, it's a fantastic country. And Melbourne's a fantastic city. It really is.
How do you think Melbourne is different in 2012 to when you arrived in 1968?
Oh, well, you know, the men are not all wearing white shirts and black ties and... and shorts with long socks.
they should. Sounds cool.
Look, I think Melbourne's changed just like anywhere else in the world has changed, you know. But also Melbourne in particular, I think, has become a lot more cosmopolitan. Certainly there were migrants in Melbourne in the 60s. There were a lot of Greeks and Italians and, of course, lots of Poms like me. But so much more now. I mean, we just... There is everything in Melbourne now. I mean, I think it's a great city. And a great city, as I said, for the GLBTI community as well. You know, Sydney's got Mardi Gras, but literally Melbourne's got everything else.
Mm.
Yeah.
I agree. Were there any men that strongly influenced your life?
Ooh, that's a good question. Men that strongly influenced my life. My father probably influenced me a lot because I used to spend a lot of time with my dad. He worked three jobs, so there wasn't a huge amount of time. But, you know, the fact that he worked three jobs was probably quite an influence in terms of my work ethic, I guess. You know, we used to go fishing together. My mother would hate to hear this, but I don't have a lot in common with my mother. But my dad and I would go fishing, and I always wanted to do things with my dad. You know, whether that was the forerunner of Carol is a lesbian, I don't know. But I, you know, I always wanted to do things with my dad. And also my mother's brother, my uncle, I was very close to him as well. And I always always figured that he was a smart man. He was really clever, you know. I don't know why, because I don't think he was any more, you know, in retrospect, I don't think he was any more clever than anybody else. But they're probably my early days were the two men who had the biggest influence on me, for sure.
What advice would you give to someone contemplating coming out?
I'd like to think that I wouldn't try to advise people, in a sense, because I think people have to do what they want to do. And advice, the word advice sort of has a tendency to sort of mean you tell them what to do. If someone said to me, should I come out, I'd say, oh, I don't know. Mm. It's up to you. But you have to feel comfortable with whatever you do. You have to feel comfortable if you don't. You have to feel comfortable if you do. Mm. So you have to have a long talk with yourself, and maybe you do have to have a long talk with other people as well, but it doesn't mean you do what they tell you.
Mm.
You just find out what was it like for you, or what did you do, or but what someone else did is completely different to what you might do. Completely different. We're all individuals. You have to be happy. You have to be feel comfortable.
This is Our Voice with Carol Wilkinson on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Gordon Wilson. Our community, our stories, our voice, Joy 94.9.
This is Our Voice on Joy 94.9. Carol Wilkinson has been in the hot seat. And Carol, we're at that part of the program where it gets deep.
Oh.
We've got a series of quick fire questions that we just...
God, you want my brain to work quickly.
Well, we'll see.
You know, I'm 62. My brain doesn't go that fast.
We'll take it at your own speed.
Oh, thank you.
But just the first answer that pops into your head.
That could be dangerous.
If you could invite three people to dinner, either living or past, who would they be?
Well, probably Dusty Springfield. Maybe K.D. Lang. And look, you know, I'm going to go with the old favourite that everyone says, but I just think it's so would be so fantastic, Nelson Mandela.
Oh, wow. Could I get
Can we come?
If you could be anywhere in the world, where would you like to be right now?
Peru.
And is there any job you'd like to attempt for a day?
Oh, brain surgery would be good. Let's see what else. Oh, how about being a... Oh, yes. Pilot.
What's been the best experience of your life?
I think I can truly say the best experience of my life is actually being involved with a lot of the organisations that I've volunteered with, and they've been such enjoyable experiences. It's not one specific thing, but the whole sort of gamut of, you know, meeting so many of my friends, people that I consider to be really good friends, I've met through Switchboard, Joy, Galfa, the places that I've volunteered. It doesn't mean I haven't met friends elsewhere, but just the experience of enjoying volunteering is probably, it'd have to fit into that criteria, I think.
If same-sex marriage was legal, would you get married?
Probably not. I've been married once, you know. You don't have to go there again. My partner and I, Chris and I, have talked about it, and I think we both sort of think not. But we are absolutely 100% behind legalizing gay marriage. It's about equality. Mm-hmm. Whether you want to do it, it's a bit like Julia Gillard saying, look, you know, we don't need gay marriage because I'm not, look at me, I'm not married. Well, that's your choice. You know, I don't have a choice. Mm. I'd like to have the choice to say, no, I don't want to.
And we're going to finish on an easy one.
Oh, goody.
What's your star sign?
Oh, you know what? I'm not into stars.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We might have to work that out for you.
No, I am Cancer, but... to be honest, you know, I am the biggest atheist and non-believer in everything that you're ever likely to meet.
And that might be a lovely way to draw today's conversation to a close, Carol, and we thank you for joining Jess and I on Our Voice.
Thank you. I'm really, really happy to come and chat to you.
And you've been listening to Carol Wilkinson, our special guest.
You have been listening to Our Voice on Joy 94.9. For more information, head to joy.org.au to connect with Our Voice online.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.